guys to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, at this moment of dire beauty, America's solar return. So more than perfectly, I re-welcome longtime ally James Yeager, who loves to quote Isaiah, "Speak to the weary, a word that will rouse them." So, longtime ally of democracy, mytho-political word wizard, diagnostician, mentor, James Yeager was born into a Texas ACLU populist tradition, encouraging us to incantational magic to invite in the protectors of democracy, that we all may wake up and dance our way back into the choreography of creation. James Yeager worked for Senator Gene McCarthy and wrote Washington articles for the Texas Observer, the Progressive Populist, and the Minority Business Report. He now lives in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Yay! Welcome, Jamie.
Thank you, Caroline. Always a pleasure to be here. Even no matter how dire the fate of the country appears to be at any given moment, there's always something positive to be found somewhere, and you and I will embark on that search once again today.
We will. I've been saying to myself for a while, you know, again, whenever we find ourselves or I find myself whimpering, going, let's replace whimpering with the Aikido martial arts key-up, which is, hey, hey, hey. So we're gathered, yeah. So it is emergency, or as Steve Behrman says, emerge and see, you know, Council for Strategic Calm, that we all be skookum, which is a wonderful word taught to me by David Grimes. It means connected to the spirits and completely competent for the task at hand. And as trickster David Grimes reminds us, and reminded me at a dark political time, if we're not having fun, we're just not serious enough. So here we go, there we go.
So, I like that, being serious enough to have fun.
Yeah.
That's world magic right there.
Right. So we know, or the Astro people, or from last week's show, we know that the debate was happening as, and now for all of us, as Saturn, the principle of authority and leadership, is stationing. It really wants our attention, and it's retrograde. So it says, all right, all you citizens, insource your own authority, so we are all to retrieve our Saturn, our autonomy. Neptune, dreams and vision, also stationing retrograde, so we are all to retrieve our vision, our fundamental task to reassume responsibility for dreaming the desirable vision into incarnational actuality. And then I'll toss it to you in a second here, but it's like, so listening to the debate, you know, it was like, uh-oh. And then what I tweeted out going, so it comes to all of us to assume cultural narrative lead, to be good citizens, good earth citizens, and as in any good wasteland myth, the king is wounded, the land is ill, due to the abuse of rank and privilege, and thus begins the Grail legend. So, to toss to you, we're electing a story, inaugurating a vision. Does that hum in yourself?
Well, it does. The Supreme Court ruling today essentially restores the monarchy. The Supreme Court has, and the money behind it, have decided that democracy is too messy, and so we'll just go back to having a king. And there was, you know, the actor Derek Jacobi.
Yeah. Yes, wonderful.
He was interviewed one time, and they asked him, you know, how do you prepare to play, you know, Hamlet or Lear? He says, well, it's two sides of the same coin. He says, if I'm playing a courtier of one of those kings, I try to play the king within the man. But if I'm the principal, Hamlet or whoever, then I want to play the man within the king and keep that focus clear between the man and the king. And there's certain actions that are appropriate to each of them. And right now, as in the midst of unutterable public turmoil, we have a clinic in bad decision-making. going on in the House of Representatives and in the United States Supreme Court. And all that means is that each one of us has to stand up and be a force for order, not law and order, otherwise pronounced in the suburbs as law and order, but for the essential order of the universe, which, you know, bends towards justice, Martin Luther King reminded us.
It's cosmic law and order.
Right. The essential order of the universe. And when we see it being disturbed by, disturbed people in the political world, all we can do is get up and start over again and with a new day and do whatever is put in front of us to do that day. Whatever path we seek, weird we dree, is that right?
Yes,
yeah, one dree is one's weird.
We dree our weird, yeah.
Yeah, and keep on doing what we're here to do, which is to be part of this glorious pageant of life, despite all of the forces and individuals who appear to be, you know, running riot and stealing the public peace. So I was raised in a family where there were six children, and my youngest sister says politics was the seventh child at the dinner table. We were raised to have civic curiosity about, well, what can be done? What can be done? And the first precinct, that's what we call them in Texas, precinct convention that I went to was when I was about 12 years old in 1960. And my mother was for Kennedy, and her big friends were for Humphrey. And, Lyndon Johnson stole the convention because this was in Houston, Texas. But, you know, if you're raised as a Texas liberal, you know, you win an election every 30 years, but you're preparing to win that one for 30 years. You don't stop. You don't quit. You don't say, well, they beat us. I'm all discouraged. I'm going to go, you know, eat worms in the backyard. It's like, no. Joe Hill, organize.
Yes, don't mourn, organize. We're underlining that. And don't be whaley-whaley, key up. No whimpering, no cringing, but we're here to take a deep breath and gather our wits there and our strategy. You know, and as we spoke last backstage, you know, what I wish, you know, Biden would have done is just, you know, have, again, over-prepared, badly prepared, cold medicine, kryptonite, we don't know, you know, there we go. But just have 4 points, right? And then, you know, he's born on with the sun at the same degree as the Gettysburg Address. That government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. As, as author of the Ministry of the Future, Kim Stanley Robinson said, that's good science fiction. That's what's on the table, the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. And maybe we change it, the government of the earth, by the earth, for the earth, shall not perish. And then the danger. All he had to do, right, all we must do, again, as agents of sane democracy, and we'll get to our own strategy, is, you know, here's the ideal, here's what's on the ballot, you know, America or Trump, democracy or Trump, you know, and the danger, you know, Project 25, which, you know, I have plenty of notes, and you probably have notes too, but as we noted, you know, the Supreme Court decision on Monday behind us, here's Thursday, July 4th, right? Granting immunity, you know, to the felon, like, oh no, the coup is in process. The coup is in process. You know, as Norman Ornstein said, also the other decision, I wonder how long it will take before Americans wake up to the brutal reality that the U.S. Supreme Court has staged a coup, brazenly seizing power from the other two branches in a way that is utterly contrary to the framers' vision of the role of a court and a judiciary. And it is crystal clear that if Donald Trump wins, the Supreme Court will be much closer to the Russian or Hungarian courts than the one in our Constitution. And so we go, vergogna, 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 shame, shame, shame. So what's on the table? You know, we want to, you know, it's an amazing shot. Well, I don't know what to call it. But it's, you know, abortion, forget it, you know, everything, the executive, abolishing NOAA, right? Abolishing NOAA, like who needs storm warnings? Abolishing the Department of Education, the Department of Commerce, defund the Environmental Protection Agency. Remember, teammates, what's on the ballot? On day one of the dictator, we're going to compost this, but we have to be aware of it, you know, abolish the drill everywhere, he says. We're going to drill everywhere. So it's really Earth is on the ballot. You know, Department of Justice also, as well as eliminating the interdependence of numerous government agencies, ensure that they are loyal only to Donald Trump and Donald Trump alone. Civil Rights Project 2025 aims to infuse the government with the principles of Christianity, outlaw pornography, except for Republicans, right? Eliminate protections from discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity for LGBT individuals and focus civil rights on anti-white racism. Oh, God, okay. We metabolize our conniption fits. Education. Project 2025 aims to eliminate Head Start, eliminate free school lunch funding, as well as federal funds for low-income students. Ah! Project 25 aims to cut Medicaid, end Medicare's ability to negotiate drug prices, eliminate health coverage of emergency contraceptives, and reject abortion as health care. Taxes. Project 2025 aims to give a massive tax cut for corporations and the wealthy and institute a requirement that any reversal of the tax cut require a 3/5 majority vote. Environment. Project 2025 aims to reverse the EPA finding that carbon dioxide emissions are harmful to human health, repeal regulations that curb greenhouse gas emissions, prevent states from adopting stricter regulations to curb fossil fuel emissions, shut down loan programs for clean energy, as well as increase coal production. And that's just the beginning, ladies and gentlemen. Right. So it's serious, right? Okay. And there's anything else that we might have left out, but that's
Project 2025 thing is very useful for us because it makes the stakes quite clear about the attack on democracy, the attack on individual rights for anybody who isn't rich and white, and the utter, how would I say, bleakness of their vision of the United States. They're mad at the United States government as much. They've confused the United States government with the communists. You know, all of that hatred from the 50s has never gone away of one of the political parties for the government of the United States. Ever since Barry Goldwater in 1964, the other guys have been running on the idea that government is a fraud. It's just there to steal your money and call it taxes, spend it on poor people. And, you know, I grew up in the South. I know how these people think about it. And the restoration of the Confederacy has been an explicit project of the Republican Party since at least George W. Bush. And now they're even closer to it. But that just makes my personal responsibility, everybody else's, can do what they want, but my job is to keep showing up for the proposition that, you know, evil may be there, but it must be resisted. And I can't fall for the idea that, oh, they're so powerful. You know, the anti-communists used to go around in the 50s saying, well, you know, the Russian spies, they're everywhere, and they're so efficient, and we, our democracy, it gets in the way of efficiency. And some of this Supreme Court stuff where they're, like the Chevron decision, not, you know, attacking the basis of the administrative state because it's inconvenient to the multinational corporation and the billionaires in whose name they operate. And it looks overwhelming, but there's enough of us. I mean, the presidential race has been within 1 or 2 points for something like 18 months. Everybody has known who was going to be nominated. Everybody has known what it's about. And, you know, we have one party that wants to attack the United States government and the other one that wants to use the United States government for the benefit of everybody, not just for the benefit of the millionaire classes. And I don't think that one debate performance this far in advance of the election is going to be the thing that determines the election. Now, we've got a bunch of people over all of the media, you know, fainting in the aisles, clutching their pearls. Oh, my God, we have to do, you know, we have to replace Joe. No, we don't. Joe on a bad day is 37 times better than the other guy on a good day. And it's just so plain for everybody to see. But Trump has never gotten more than, I think it's 35% of the electorate, not of voters, but the electorate. And, you know, we're within 1 or 2 points of him right now. And my belief is that people ultimately vote on the state of the economy. And the metric is that applied over the 20th century and every presidential election in the 21st, that if the party in power if the United States experiences 2% economic growth in the 2 quarters prior to the election, the party that holds the White House continues to hold the White House. And by that metric, you know, it was like 1.9 for Hillary in 2016. She came close, but it wasn't quite there. We're well above 2% for the second quarter
of this
year. And
you were saying, because I was like, well, the Saudis, I mean, so Netanyahu, Putin, and the Saudis want Trump to win. And you were saying the Saudis can't sink the economy by oil finagling because it's too far out. It takes too much time to do that. Is that what you were saying? They can't do it because what?
That's right.
Okay.
To turn the United States economy around by trying to raise oil prices and knock the economy sideways, they would have had to start that earlier than now to be effective by election day. And so,
okay.
Much though those various dictators want to stage some kind of October surprise, they can't stage an economic surprise because the American economy is too big and it takes too long to affect it.
Okay, so we put that in the compost pile. All right, that's good.
Right.
And then I love the tweet that you sent me from Tiedrich, who says, "I'm calling on Arthur Gregg Sulzberger to step down as publisher of the New York Times. His recent performance proves he isn't up to the task." And I go, "That's great. I'm canceling my New York Times subscription and maybe a bunch of others," which is fun for us all to insource our autonomy. Calling for pundits to step down. It's a festival of asking for many people to step down, you know, and then to address the Biden thing. So much for grand trines. So there was a cold, there was kryptonite, there was who knows, but there's a spacey thing. But in the Grail, and the value of not having a savior, a person, it's all of us. It's all of us. And then let's address, you know, that we're not, you know, and then somebody had posted Brandolini's Law, also known as the bull bleep asymmetry principle. It's an internet adage coined in 2013 by Alberto Brandolini, Italian programmer, that emphasizes the effort of debunking misinformation in comparison to the relative ease of creating it in the first place. The amount of energy needed to refute bull bleep is an order of magnitude bigger than that needed to produce it. Well, that's why we're all in training, right, to be able to do that when overwhelmed, like, you know, and conniption fits. And we go, okay. So, you know, and then, you know, I was looking through, you know, past, and people, you know, wonderful Heather Cox Richardson, a great go-to person, was bemoaning the untimely death of Eric Bolert, who was a wonderful person, because he was tracking the glaring disconnect between reality and how the press depicts White House accomplishments. Means a key question lingers. Why is the press rooting against Biden? Is the press committed to keeping Biden down so a Trump rematch will be close and entertaining for the press? He wrote that on the day he died, April 4th, 2022. And we go, okay, and who has a climate policy for us all to encourage and expand? And who wants to eliminate all Saturn regulations on drilling and pillaging? Hurricane Beryl is we're getting, here we go, we're in the thing. But let's address, many sane people going, well, people scrambling, going, well, who can we replace, you know, Newsom, somebody, and it's like, that's not going to happen, right?
No. The time to replace Joe Biden was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And nobody stepped up in the Democratic primaries to do that. And the alleged reason to replace him is that a bunch of people decided he looked bad on television.
Well, yeah.
Well, if looking bad on television was such a damn crime, I would think that the other guy ought to be replaced first, you know?
Well, yes. He was spacey. Definitely.
Sure.
And for me, in the mythic realm, because we did a show last week before the debate, on, you know, the shadow debate and all, you know, and I was going, oh, but, you know, it's a moon, Neptune, Saturn conjunction trining Joe Biden's son. And it's like so much for trines. I think he just, you know, really didn't want to be there. But also the sense, you know, I'd been saying, may his Celtic ancestors, you know, grant him the capacity to remember to quote the Gettysburg Address and everything. And I do think that the horrendous moral lapse of Biden on Gaza has deprived him of Celtic ancestral support. It's weighing on his soul because it is such a contradiction. So we just have to step up and insist
right.
on that. And Bibi's coming soon. There's all kinds of action to prevent Bibi from reaching the Capitol. I don't know how useful that will be. My wish, and again, let's all just imagine things, is that when Bibi comes here, Biden goes to address the Knesset and speak to, you know, insane, reverent common sense, you know, going, well, just at least on an imaginary level. As we're talking now, right now, for everybody, Jupiter quintiles Neptune. It's granted to all of us irresistible eloquence, what Biden did not have, on behalf of all of us, and the capacity to open portals between worlds, inviting in the desirable story, inviting in sane, reverent common sense, inviting in that tyranny is so ridiculously exposed that it becomes, you know, satire. And satire, remember, the Celts thought that only satire could bring down the unruly tyrant. The practice was that the satirist in all of us would present to the unruly power abusing person, you know, their satirical critique, and the unruly power crazed person would have to respond in artful kind, which is a moot point here. And whoever's critique was less true, the ground would open up and eat them. And I go, I think that's a good image, right? So we go for the, you know, and So that theme of it's not going to happen. Yes, there's many people kind of reporting in on that, because people are like, well, I'm going to vote for Jill Stein, or I'm going to vote for RFK Jr. And you had said, you know, a vote for anybody but Biden is a vote for Trump.
Straight up.
Okay.
I'm having a discussion with my Trumpist brother about that very thing.
I'm sorry, say what?
I'm having a discussion with my Trumpist brother.
Ah, oh.
About that very thing.
Wow.
And, you know, he's hot under the collar that I'm making that comparison. But I don't care, because that's the way the facts are. And you can say that Joe wasn't eloquent, but the facts are eloquent, that the United States economy is recovering, that with Joe, as president, we at least have some opportunities not to be governed by Putin and Netanyahu and the other unsavory characters that that other orange fellow seems to like.
Right.
You know?
And as
we're still in position with Joe today as a country that can turn toward the light. I mean, we suffer from the difficulty that our empire was founded on slavery and that the Union Dead of 1861 to 1865 was such a massive sacrifice, but that was more than 100 years ago. And we need to refurbish our attachments to democratic rule, or we just sink like any other old empire does. And so in a way, we're resisting entropy, but that's always one of the great science fiction tropes is, you know, the settlers on a distant moon somehow managed to show up and prevent the destruction of the universe by some unleashed, you know, mechanical power. And we, the people of the United States of America, are in a position to affect our future, no matter how much, how would I say, our official speakers in the media are telling us that it's all futile, it's not going to work, decency is once again going to be overwhelmed. You and I have talked about the quotation in Bertolt Brecht about good was defeated not because it was good, but because it was weak. And the people have to stand up and make good stronger by being good ourselves and showing up in strategic ways to blunt, if we can't ultimately dispense with these forces of chaos and slavery, and, you know, they're trying to re-enslave women. In fact, it's about been half successful. And it's like these people have no understanding of history, whatever. And I would say that, too, about the people that are all
right.
We have to replace Joe.
Yeah.
They have no sense of history. You can't do that in the American system. There's not a mechanism for doing that, even if it were a good idea, which it is not a good idea. Go ahead.
Right. Well, yeah, and yeah, for many reasons that we'll go on after the break, but also you had introduced me years ago, yes, to exactly what you just cited. I just want to cite it again, Bertolt Brecht's, you know, five, you know, arguments against telling the truth, and I turn it into five opportunities. But he said, we got to quit telling the story of how the good is weak as water is wet. We want to tell the story of how the good is strong. That's our dynamic. So this is America's birthday. We'll come back on the solar return of America. Our guest is James Yeager, and we're going to have a short musical break, and we will be right back after that.
History lesson number one. There's not a thing that can't be done. Somewhere in this world of doubt, someone's gonna work it out. There you go. Just like that. We learn to crawl, we learn to walk. We learn to fly at Kitty Hawk. Next thing you know, one afternoon, we're driving golf balls on the moon. There you go. Just like that. Learn how to take our dreams and turn them into fine machines. There's one thing we haven't done. We haven't learned to live as one. We stand behind our border lines and talk about it all the time. History lesson number two. Not what you say, but what you do. There you go. Mm-hmm. Just like that.
There we go, team. Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, our splendid guest this hour as we gather our wits. And remember to let all adversity serve as incentive for us to hone our skills and clarify our vetting standards. Jamie Yeager. Speak to the weary a word that will rouse them, saith Isaiah. So here we are. Yeah, we go, and we go. Magic's a willingness to cooperate with everything. Not condone it, but just cooperate. So anything, anywhere is everywhere, right? So this issue of tyranny
allies
versus the earth is global, right? The French elections, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm paying attention to them, too.
Yes.
And, the auguries are in all kinds of different directions. It doesn't look good in France. It looks better in England. And here, you know, we're balanced on a knife edge. We can choose tyranny, or we can choose the limited amount of freedom that we've been able to extort from our political system up until now and try to, you know, expand that. And to me, it's a no-brainer. On the other hand, I'm 76 years old. I don't get around very much. So it's not like I can physically throw my shoulder to the wheel, but I can do it, what would I say, morally and practically. Morally in the sense of speaking out that good is not defeated, as water is wet, good remains undefeated. And we can show up for what we want to have happen easier than we can defend ourselves from what we think might going to happen if the opposition is in charge. And that's the spirit I'm working with, is I want to be the guy that shows up to try and make things better. What was it? Guy from Pittsburgh that did that wonderful children's show for so many years.
Oh, Mr. Rogers.
Mr. Rogers.
Mr. Rogers,
look,
yes,
for the helpers, he says. Look for the helpers. And the making of coalitions and the finding of allies is how political progressivism lives. And the purchasing of allies and the suppression of involvement is how the other side lives. And I don't want to be a part of that.
No,
the other side doesn't. I want to be a part of our side, you know?
You had said that.
And that means I got to do something. I can't just sit in my chair and lament.
No.
Although I'm really good at that. But
well, again,
but it doesn't do any damn good.
Well, we're electing a story. We're electing a vision.
Right.
We're looking at, you know, again, our word inaugurate comes from the augur, the diviner within all of us who would walk out into nature. I recommend it to everybody, maybe with a microdose. And nature, by her patterns, would speak to each of us and reveal the least dangerous, most possible, most, you know, whatever, person, most responsible team, and then they would be inaugurated. So everything does go back to magic if we etymology. And just like the word privilege comes from privé lege, private law, right? So it's like, there you have it, so we're here to compost privilege, right? And to go all the way back. As we're talking now, the moon's image is a sailor lowering one flag and raising another. And we go, all right, flags. Let's take flags back. And it's got a 150-degree angle to Pluto, which is awareness of danger, awareness of danger. May it unify all of us, you know, all the disparate people going, there's real danger. And you had said, I had said that, you know, Israel's having a Uranus transit. When it was born, the sun was at 23 plus Taurus. Uranus, trickster principle of insisting on equality and humans wetting the land, is going forwards and backwards and forwards. You know, it's a friend back in October had asked me, do you think Israel will survive this? And I was like, not in this form, right? And you have spoken of Israel as part of the U.S. empire, but you said, you know, that it is colonialism contains the seeds of its own destruction. And you said the Supreme Court in Israel now drafting the ultra-Orthodox will blow up the coalition, yeah?
That's my belief. I think that, you know, coalition building in Israel, as a friend of mine used to say, it's based on precinct by precinct appeasement of different political groupings. So it's very intricate. And when something happens that, say, a third, the most right-wing third of Bibi's support is now mad at him because he couldn't stop the law from being the law, that's pretty irreparable. I mean, I don't see how he's going to survive it. I don't say it's going to happen in the next 2 weeks, but the revolt of the right wing at no longer being protected, protected form of citizenship for them, where they don't, private law for the Orthodox is what the right wing coalition is based on in Israel. And this Supreme Court ruling is like, no, no private law. You're an Israeli just like everybody else. Thank you. Here's your rifle, sir. Put down your Torah. You can go back to it after your service is over. And that's going to knock the Netanyahu coalition sideways, I believe, within this year. Let me put it that way.
Right. Well, you know, may it be so. We don't know what, well, but let's envision. What positive, miraculous stopping of carnage might occur tomorrow, you know, soon, you know, in Gaza, because it's like, this is the first, you know, live-streamed, you know, Holocaust carnage we've ever had that's part of the dynamic of intimacy. I mean, there are people reporting in Gaza, Bisan, you know, that I love as much as I love any human. It's like, there is kinship, you know, kinship crossing borders. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, part of our dynamic, you know, of participatory democracy, participatory animism. We are kinned with you, you know, and, you know, just to send Biden going, this is a huge contradiction. You know grief. You know grief. You know about grieving rituals. You know, Kamala Harris and you did a profound grieving ceremony right after the inauguration. It was silent, and it was powerful magic. And when Biden went to Israel, they loved him because he grieved with the families of the hostages. And they go, we like you more than Netanyahu. So he's got some purchase there. But then his inveiglement, you know, by the long, I don't know what to call it, fantasy romance with Israel. You know, do you think there might be a divorce? You know, America divorcing Israel, is that, well, we're not limited to the possible. Is that desirable? Yes.
That's a good reminder. We're not limited to the possible.
No.
Well, during World War I, Virginia Woolf wrote in one of her diaries, the future is dark, and that is, I think, the best thing the future can be, meaning we don't know what's going to happen, and it's proper as human beings not to know, not to be able to see around corners. I mean, every now and again, you get a flash of precognition and so on, certain members of society do, but as far as what's going on over there, the United States is in the position of being able to influence Israel somewhat. And the rage of my children at Biden for not leaning stronger on Israel, is a real thing.
Yes.
And my children are representatives of a movement in the United States. Now, my youngest son says, well, I'm going to vote for Joe because I'm going to vote for the guy that believes in science as opposed to the guy who not only doesn't understand it, but doesn't believe in it. And but he's mad about exactly what you're talking about. The United States is complicit in murder.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
It is.
And because it's organized state action, that's what tips it over into genocide. And I got lectured by a friend the other day about, well, you know, Israel's at risk. We have to stand up for them no matter what. Yeah. And we've always done it, and we can't change now.
Yeah.
And I had to just not argue. Not a condition that's very usual with me, but that's what I felt was appropriate under the circumstances, that I'm not going to argue this point with this person at this time. But I do argue it politically that, yes, the United States, just as in Vietnam, it had no business trying to level a country from bombing by 40,000 feet. And we have no business trying to extend Israeli colonialism and make it more, what's the word I want, apparently stable. Because it's not stable. As I said, colonialism contains within it the seeds of its own destruction. It's an inherently unstable phenomenon, just like empire. And my generation, the fight with the Democratic Party has been, starting in Vietnam and entwined with civil rights and environmentalism, is we have to use the powers of government. The trouble with liberalism is it has some squeamishness about using the power of government. As we see, our opponents have no squeamishness about misusing the power of government. Our guys should at least use it properly, and Joe is mostly, but how to walk that line in foreign policy and in Israel in particular is the difficulty. How do we use our known economic and moral power to, if not persuade, at least moderate the Israeli search for revenge? And, you know, I can't affect what Joe does, but I can be part of the consciousness of the United States that says we don't want to have extrajudicial killings. Thank you very much. We don't want to support them. We don't want to prop up people who do them. And we've been able to make that decision in other parts of the world, but until we make it in the Middle East, in with Israel in particular, we're once again exposing the hollowness that, you know, weakens democracy. If we don't have actual democracy everywhere within our reach, we're just another set of con artists. And I don't want the United States to be remembered as, well, they were a set of con artists.
They
pretended to be in favor of democracy, but when it came down to it, they didn't do it. Go ahead.
No, that's what's on the table. But I want to go to and fro between worlds here, you know, about, well, we remember in Doris Lessing's novel Shikasta, where she posits three colonizing forces on Shikasta, which is the Earth, and there's the Syrians, who are kind of like the World Bank. They do experiments. They're heartless. They're kind of, but they move on, you know. And then there's Shamat that runs on conflict and heat and polarity. And let's all remember, team, that tyranny feeds on polarity. As Ally has said, if you want people to get nothing done but conflict, convince them they're on one side of something, you will only get heat. What two needs is three, which is the unifying story. So it behooves all of us to magnetize inwardly and outwardly the invitational all-inclusive guiding story to sanity, that life on Earth is on the ballot. It's on the ballot. You know, this is this. You know, as they say in the South, we ain't play acting now, children. Everything's on the ballot. And so I'm always in love with David Graeber and David Wengrow's book, The Dawn of Everything. It's so wonderful. I'm still reading it. I'm a month in or more. But it is invaluable, really, for all of us to be educated participants. It's their dedication, their Saturn dedication. It took them 10 years to write, and David Graeber died 3 days afterwards. But handing it to us, going, here, I got to go, but here, oh humans. It's the history of humans gathering from the Pleistocene now, you know, and the tipping between authoritarianism and egalitarianism, although it's more complex and beautiful than that. But they wrote it with the dedication that humans always remember that we have creative agency over how we envision community. You know, and so we go, okay, you know, Biden, you know, Democratic centrist, all right, that's right. But it'll do to give us some breathing room. You know, so it's not a time for tantrum yoga, like, which is available out there, but it's not useful. You know, again, the gathering going, how shall we redesign the world? Let's have a little breathing room right now. Let's protect as much life as possible to begin the deeper deal of reformulating, you know, how we gather. I always bring up this part, but let me just bring it up again from the dawn of everything. Many things. But he says, you know, from the Pleistocene, we have evidence that humans cared for each other from birth to death. There's caring. You know, it's like Margaret Mead said, you know, somebody said, what's your example of civilization? He said, well, when we find the bones of somebody who had a broken bone and it mended, that means there's civilization because there was care. And so he goes all the way through, and then the Revolutionary War. Even before that, in the 18th century, Condillac, great Native American articulators who even went to Europe and lectured the Europeans on how uncivilized they were, you know, democracy borrowed from, you know, the Huron, the Iroquois, and many, many people. And when the founding fathers, here we are, July 4th, met with them, they said, where are your women? It won't work without women. In fact, the Council of Grandmothers has veto on everything. It won't work without that. And you have this problem called slavery, right? It's not going to work without that. So, as you said, this is the Confederacy being, you know, rising monstrously, you know. But the other example they give is Teotihuacan in Mesoamerica. And they said, well, it arises out of Mayan culture, which is big. Complexity, science, calendars, beauty, all kinds of things. But a hereditary priesthood, human sacrifice, monuments. And Teotihuacan, the two Davids write in Dawn of Everything, read it. You know, for the first 300 years, we're almost there, you know, there we can't wait another 100. Was like that, you know, evidence of human sacrifice, you know, war, captive sacrifice, infant sacrifice, you know. But then they say, but then a remarkable thing happened, and let us all remember that. The citizens of Teotihuacan decided to change. And there was no more monument building, no more hereditary priesthood, no more war, no more captives, no more human sacrifice. And they put all of their collective wealth into housing for everyone and art and healing and culture, right? And it's like they're pitching it to us, going, remember, we have creative agency. You know, the fact that we seem stuck with a system is a delusion. And remember, the word delusion comes from de ludo, which means out of the game, whereas illusion means in ludo, which is in the game. And then just one more thing to go back to the thing I brought up. In Shikasta, there are also the wise Canopians, and they say, we have no plan. We simply feel what's needed and respond. Very Cancerian. The soul of America has that. And they said, you know, when people are in moments backstage where they're wondering whether to be expedient or to dree their weird, to play their role in destiny. The spirits are all around going, no, remember what you came to do. Remember what you came to do. I want us to envision that, well, around ourselves and around Biden and around everybody, you know, remember what you came to do. Don't go for expediency. Go for your weird that is yours to dree now. Be surprising even to self. And even if you don't, you know, for all of us, I think, to gather backstage, and radio is magic that way, we're all spirits in each other's voices, and to imagine dissolving America and everywhere's receptivity to tyranny and cruelty. And I go to calling on, you know, honey badgers and possums. Honey badgers and possums are immune to cobra venom. And cobra venom is a marvel of symmetry, like the COVID virus. It locks right into mammalian breathing. But honey badgers and possums have evolved so that their receptors have shrunk so that the cobra venom no longer fits. So I just want to send this to yourself and to all of us, like, all right, let's be like that. Biomimicry everywhere. Backstage, let's imagine the soul of this country, the soul of the world, the soul of democracy, the soul of our kinship with all life, that we're shrinking our receptors to tyranny and cruelty so they no longer fit. Is that fun?
That's not only fun and absolutely required, it's what I believe is happening at this time.
Oh, good.
That the alleged benefits of tyranny are being painted in lurid colors. By, you know, we've had to put up with that since 2015, and we've been under continuous assault by the forces of new and improved tyranny brought up to date in the modern world. And they have, you know, basically limitless free advertising on the news. And yet, we the people have been shrinking our receptivity to that. I mean, the mathematical truth is that Trump has been beaten twice. And, you know, he actually lost to Hillary. It's just that a bunch of rocks and stones got to vote in Wyoming and places like that. And so he won the Electoral College. But then he totally lost last time. And even with Biden in a weakened state, we are still not only running him even, we're beating him in the most recent polls. And that's the working of that antidote, or that it's actually an evolutionary adaptation that you're talking about. And I think that the American people have been undergoing an evolutionary adaptation to where the shiny, glittery, distracting objects of tyranny are not quite strong enough to dominate. Now, we're going to find out in November.
Well, we're going to intend. We're going to intend. November's a long way away. But I just want to put the churlishness of the Supreme Court at the same time they're bringing down, you know, all horrible, that it is now illegal to sleep outside. Right. Oh, you homeless people, you cannot, or anybody, you cannot sleep outside. It's like so churlish. And then I just want to stick in, too, that it's, you know, what we want is the necessary opportunity to compost and reimagine capitalism more like what Teotihuacan did 300 years into their experiment, so that our collective wealth, so that we can be like the Pleistocene, care for each other and tend our environment and take care of each other and humans and the earth and be stewards, right? So there we go on that. And we're in our last, well, 3 minutes, if you want to come up with blessings and woofiness, Jamie, to and fro, whatever you want, wherever you want to go with that.
I'm sorry, I've got a message that's distracting me, and I can't figure out how to turn it off.
Oh, okay, it's a Biden thing, right? It's everywhere. We're all subject to space out. That's good. Well, we're not hearing it, so that's okay. But more like Teotihuacan. I mean, what's on the ballot is our future and our future freedom to decide how we gather. You know, so for many people, are like, oh, Biden, blah, 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 you know, and whatever. And it's like, it's our assignment at the moment. I mean, we don't know.
Right.
We don't know. But at the moment, this is the story, and the story of, you know, and it's also because Netanyahu, you know, wants Biden to lose, you know, an astute friend, hi, Roberta, said, you know, the more horrible things that Netanyahu does, the more Americans hate Biden, the more it encourages Netanyahu to do horrible things. It's time for all of us to be responsive and to expand our repertoire of responses rather than reactions. You know, again, to be agents.
Amen.
Agents of expanded response rather than caught up in hot reaction, and that polarity feeds tyranny. To be snookered into polarity is to feed tyranny. Oh, there I go. So more like Teotihuacan, collective wealth dedicated to the well-being of all citizens and all citizens of the earth, all flora, fauna, fungi. I mean, that's what we're rooting for. So there we go. Here we are, riding on
well,
the back.
Well, we can't get rid of the dementors in American politics. What we do get to do is be non-dementor-ish ourselves.
Indeed.
And out of that, constellating allies with allies, becoming allies with the earth, with becoming allies with the what I will call the spirit world.
Yes.
That's all around, the woven throughout the fabric of the universe. And that part within each of us is the part that, if brought forward, can change history and change the odds. You know, the knock on Western political coverage in general is that it's horse racish. Who's ahead? Who's behind? It's like, you know, recess at the middle school.
We're on our way out. We're on our way out, Jamie Yeager, great ally.
Right.
Forwards, backwards, forwards. There we go. Wolf howl. Wolf howl.
Forward.
That we're gathering our wits, that we're aware of danger and cultivating response as well to preserve and expand democracy and to compost capitalism in the fullness of time and gather in some other way. Anyway, thank you so much, Jamie Yeager, and thanks always to the KPFA team and crew. Happy 4th of July, America's solar return. More on that next week. Woof, 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 woof.